This week on RSBNB Update, the Hall of Memories is here. It provides lore and a new click-intensive divination training method. Also, a roundup of the latest mining and smithing Q&A, focusing on the debate around high-level smithable art. Also, RSBNB Update turns 13. This is RSBNB Update, episode 675, recorded Thursday, June 14th, 2018, A Memory of a Melody. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for RSBNB Update. We're back this week, and as you guys heard, that is what we have been hiding for the vast majority of this month and a little bit longer. That is indeed some new theme music for RSBNB Update that you guys heard in the show open. And we're unveiling it this week because this week also marks our 13th birthday episode. So this means RSBNB Update has been around since 2005, believe it or not. And oh boy, it has been a long journey, hasn't it? I don't know, Tanis, how long you've been here.
Lucky 13. Not that soon. I wasn't even playing RuneScape in 2005, so...
It's been an amazing ride, and I'll have a few words later about that. But, I mean, of course, the main focus I want to draw everyone's attention to this week is the new theme music. And to celebrate that, you guys might sometimes be wondering, who made that RSBNB Update theme music, both the intro and the closeout? Because there is new closeout music, too. And that is Dave. Welcome back, Dave.
Hello, hello. It's good to be back.
So how did this go a number of years ago? I had to go back into my archives to check when we first started using your theme music. And it was it was a long time ago. Episode 200 in 2009. That's how long this has been part of our
solid 9 years. And if I remember correctly, I think I stumbled around RSBNB probably mid to late 2007.
I have to
check my forum profile to see exactly when, but I believe it was sometime around 2007. So I had actually found the community through the podcast, and you know, push came to shove, and ended up joining the community, and you know, the rest is history. 9 years later, here we are, and I finally got around to recording an updated version of what I wrote and recorded in 2009.
And so we were talking in pre-show about this, and apparently for the intro music in 2009 there was no plan for it, and you had to go and relearn what you did when you were recomposing this.
Yeah, I mean, I knew the general, like, obviously the general sort of layout of it, you know, as far as, you know, rhythm and tonality and whatnot, but getting down to the, you know, nitpicky, like verbatim what I actually did, I did have to go back and relearn it because, you know, as I was saying in the pre-show, I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. I just wanted to make it better,
right?
It sound better.
And
because it is quite the staple and the, you know, the iconic sound. I mean, this music was literally written specifically for this show. It's been nowhere else. So it's, you know, I kind of wanted to preserve that, I guess, recognizability.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like it's all the classics. You know, we were talking about this in pre-show as well. It's like, you know, you're watching Star Trek and the USS Enterprise appears and there's that classic riff right there. Or if you're watching CNN, you know, it's CNN because they have their own staple as well. And, you know, that was one of the things when, I think we started talking about this around Double XP weekend this year. And, you know, it was an idea to do it before, but we decided finally let's do it for the anniversary, and here we are. And one of the key things was, let's not change it too much. Let's just bring it into the modern world and add a new flair to it. So that's what we have.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny because I've been wanting to do it, and I'm sure I've run it past you probably over the past year of wanting to do it. And we finally nailed something down. So that sort of was the kick in the rear end to sort of get in gear and get everything going. I didn't update actually my studio until about a month ago. So it was kind of best to wait till now. So everything has kind of been brought up to speed in that sense. So it all worked out. And here we are for the 13th year in a row. So,
and all real instruments too. No, nothing synthesized, yep. Nothing pre-recorded. Everything you see there done by Dave. So I can't thank you enough for that. And when I first heard that, it just blew me away. I shared it with a couple people prior to this in, you know, mainly Earth, because I mean, he was also a staple of the podcast and it blew him away as well. So aside from that, me and him until today were the only ones to really hear about this on the show, but now everyone else is hearing about it. Tanis, you heard it here for the first time as well. Thoughts?
Yeah, I was just blown away. And it's kind of neat when I think back, because I probably start listening, I don't know, 2010, 2011, sometime like that. So this is the only music I've ever associated with the show. And so, like, to be here now with the person that made the music, when I always wanted to know who made the music, like, where did this come from? It's really cool. And you never know how, like, remakes are going to go, because sometimes you hear, like, oh, this song got remade, and then you hear it, and you're like, oh, no. You ruined it. What'd you do? But this is, like, perfect. It's just, I don't know, it's just the right mix of new and the old. So, yeah, just a great job. I can't say enough about it.
And that's what we do. We cement RSVB update in history, and Dave, you have had a role here in helping us do that. So thank you again.
Indeed. I'm happy to be such a large contributor and such a large way for you, but semi-small way for me, because it's just kind of what I do. So I'm glad to be a part of it.
Thank you so much. And speaking of cementing history, I think it's a good time to begin our 13th year of RSVB update right now, and that is talking about RuneScape and the update of the week.
And lucky this week, 13.
Yeah, lucky 13. But I think it's going to be a good 13. Just wait till next Shane, week.
You must have been just a wee little guy when you started.
Yeah, and you know what? That's another thing going back. You know, you hear the production difference between today and back then. And I mean, it's like you got to wonder, what kind of microphone was I using back then? What kind of show notes did we have, if any?
Scribbles on a napkin, maybe a Logitech USB mic, you know, whatever it takes.
But yes, we do. This is reveal number 2 of 3 in June. Next one is coming next week. So that one is also going to be a big one.
Yay.
No.
That's the one I'm waiting for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Everyone? Yeah. Shh. Everyone. But anyways. So this week sees the release of the Hall of Memories, which is a new Guthix-based divination training method. You require 70 divination for it. The idea behind this one is that it provides more XP. It also doesn't reward as well in terms of GP, but it can also be AFK'd if you so desire with this. So to access this, you head to the Guthix Memorial in the Piscatoris Hunter Colony, and then you descend down into the pool. And once you're in there, you're presented with, I guess what we could call a number of pillars and bots that have divine energy coming out of them. And you need to harvest that energy into jars and then bring it to the big central, crater that's at the other end of the room. So, are we fans of divination here?
Yes.
No.
It is in my top three.
Oh, okay.
Believe it or not.
How is it in your top three?
I don't know. I just like the concept and the simplicity.
Okay.
As you probably know, my favorite skill, and it still holds a place in my heart, is runecrafting, even after the train wreck that it has become. I don't know. I just like the concept behind it, you know, memories, and, you know, it's a gathering skill that's really not in any other game necessarily. You know, every game has mining, every game has, you know, wood cutting or herbalism or something like that, but I really like divination. It's laid back, and with the release of invention, it's actually quite a decent moneymaker, AFK, making energy and whatnot.
Yeah, so, and there's actually a reward from this that helps you along the way. So
I like the money.
Yeah, definitely.
I like the money.
It's going to actually help you a lot with the money if you fill all your bots and you get to that. But we'll get to that in just a moment, because I think, Tanis, you have a story that you're
– Yeah. Okay. Well, this isn't getting the accessibility update of the year, I'll tell you that much.
All right. So to begin with, you head down there and you head off to the east and you go collect some jars. Your inventory will fill up with jars. And then you just go start gathering divine energy. You gather the divine energy based on your level. And, you know, it starts at level 70 plus. So all the various types of energy are there: lustrous, brilliant, radiant, luminous, and incandescent. And then the jar fills up faster if you go for a higher tiered source of energy. So if you're focusing on luminous and incandescent, you're going to fill your jars a lot faster than you do if you fill them with, say, lustrous energy. So luminous and incandescent, comparing that, incandescent energy fills the jars with 4% filled per tick, which is pretty big when you think about it. So
is that 2 tick in it or just normal?
And we're going to get to that in just a moment, because okay. because that's also another sore point with this update too. Two-ticking. Right. Because that wasn't a documented feature. But anyways, down there, once you start off, you're also given a number of memory bots that you need to fill up. You're given one that represents the various memories from various people or entities that were close to the relationship of Guthix. There, Aggie, who was Guthix's daughter, Saren, as we all know, god of the elves, Juna, the snake, Kress, and the Sword of Edicts. So with that being said, you need to fill each of these up with their respective form of energy. Lustrous for Aggie, brilliant for Saren, radiant for Juna, luminous for the Sword of Edicts, and incandescent for Kress. Now, this is where Tanis's story begins. Each of these pillars and bots in here are colored, according to their wisp on the surface world, and I'll let Tanis explain how that's a stumbling block.
Yeah, that's a problem when you don't see color. So, or at least be able to differentiate between colors. So I actually didn't know that I was supposed to be getting different kinds of energy because they're colored for the different bots until I looked up the show notes tonight. And I was like, oh, that's why it's taking forever. So I randomly got through two bots, and literally all week long I've gotten through two bots because I must have accidentally clicked on the right pillar at some point. Yeah. So it's been a little bit of a rough update for me.
Yeah. And I mean, when you do hover over them, they do say harvest lustrous energy and whatnot. But, you know, after you've been down there for a while, people just do it based on color. So,
is it just me, or does it seem like I feel like they go really quickly?
Do jump around.
I don't remember what the interval is, but it's my sort of general thought of this is it has a very similar feel to Tears of Guthix, which I guess makes sense considering it is a Guthix themed update. But yeah, with it switching so quickly, it definitely gave that vibe of like a Tears of Guthix, but you can do it as much as you want. So
yeah, I mean, I was really surprised because like I think my expectations as a player were a little off. Like, you know, the update's fine. I'm not criticizing it. I'm more criticizing myself, but I thought there would be more. I thought we were looking at just like a uniform time kind of thing, and it would be not more AFK, but it would be more standardized in a way, you know, like it wouldn't be random in the amount of time that you were at the wisp and all this. And that's not really what we have. What we have is a real lean forward way into divination, which is cool. I mean, the skill can use it, but it's been a pain for me to kind of navigate all of this.
Yeah. And now that you mentioned lean forward, you can effectively, as you said, two tick this. So what this means is that every time you see an XP drop, if you click on the bot or the pillar, you will harvest faster when you get that XP drop. And I guess the idea behind this is it's kind of like safe cracking, but there is no visual representation aside from the XP drop that says that it is time to click.
Yeah.
And that's, in my view, a mistake. If they want lean forward gameplay, and Jagex did indeed confirm that two-ticking this is not a bug, it is okay to do, they should make the pillars and the bots flash in the same way that the safes do, with a little bit of a...
implement some sort of an indicator in-game if it was intended, because otherwise it does seem sort of broken or half-assed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, well, and just with what we've seen before, I mean, I'm kind of surprised people weren't afraid to do it. Because had it been a bug,
everybody gets banned for a div update, but we have people that are, you know, titans on Solak, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, this is something that isn't clear within Jagex as well, is that if there is to be a lean forward gameplay mechanic to an update like this one, it should definitely say it, just as we know was the case with Fish Frenzy in Deep Sea Fishing. And
we knew to expect that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at any of these pillars inside this update, you will see that they are pulsating on the bottom, and you would think that you need to click every time it pulsates, but it is pulsating more times than the XP is dropping. So I think if they were to just lower that pulse rate to whenever the XP is dropping, you would see a better uptake on that and encourage people to... I guess do lean forward gameplay if they wanted to. So, I don't know. I see.
That's not even adding any additional coding either. It's just literally tweaking an interval of a graphic, and that's all they have to do. But as we know, Jagex, they might not.
Well, we'll get around to it, but me and the patch notes, like in a couple of months. Yeah. Someone will do it on their what they call that, their tap. Project Mod Shiny will be like, oh, we need to fix this.
On the next game blast, you know.
Game jam. Yeah.
So you guys might be wondering, you can two-tick it, you can get lots of XP here, and there are indeed a Master Quest Cape requirement for this. So for those of you guys wondering what exactly is involved with the lore behind this, all of the different bots have various pieces of lore behind them, and I put together a summary of the lore, and I've actually transcribed the lore too in the show notes. You can find that at update.rsbnb.com. So for anyone who hasn't done this update, or anyone who might be wanting to recap everything in a text form, since following those chat boxes is kind of hard, you'll find a full recap of the lore there. So I'm just going to go over some bullet points that I got out of the lore, and you guys can tell me if you think any of this stuff is overly groundbreaking. So starting off with Aggie, as we know, Aggie was Guthix's daughter, and the edicts when Guthix put them in place sharply reduced the focus that Guthix was able to give to other things. And, you know, we heard about this in the World Wakes when we were talking to Guthix. And according to the memory of Aggie, we have a fighting chance to save the world from the Elder Gods, as we know. And that's come out over time as well from the end of Sliskay's endgame and whatnot. So that's just reinforcing that. Guthix was planning for his death, and he told us about his desire to be with his wife and daughter in the World Wakes and his afterlife after that, but he ultimately wasn't sure if he'd be able to see Aggie or Fragi, his wife, again, and in some ways, this provided us in this memory a way to show how much they meant to him, even though he wouldn't actually see them in the afterlife, based on what happened in the World Wakes. And at the end of this, this first memory sums up a great burden that was left by Guthix, and he wants us, the player, the World Guardian, to know that we do have a great burden on ourselves to, in effect, protect the world from that. So nothing too groundbreaking from the Aggie memory, I don't think. It was all in the World Wakes beforehand. So I'm assuming the first two memories you did were... Aggie and Saren, because I don't think you can do them out of order, Tanis.
Yeah, okay. It is. Yeah.
All right.
I just didn't know that. Like I said, it was just luck that I must have been on the right pillar from time to time.
Yeah, definitely. Now, moving on to Saren, we know that Saren shattered herself rather than leave when Guthix banished all the gods and he put the edicts up. Guthix, in this memory, ultimately professes his love for Saren, even though he knew it was a lie, and he was just loving her for the sake of loving her, even though he felt he didn't actually love her, if that makes sense. So it was a lie to him, but no one else knew that. So that was a bit of a shock. And... he carried this on all the way until the end, and Saren never knew it was an act. Guthix described it as genuine, true, beautiful love. So this was a big shock to a lot of people because, you know, we knew there was a bit of a relationship between Guthix and Saren, but we didn't know that this is, we know how Saren felt about this, but I don't think we knew that Guthix was putting it on like this. And this is big when you think about it. So.
Guthix was player.
He accepted this lie in himself, and he felt it better than to tell the truth, because the truth would be a world full of loneliness. So he was accepting of it for that reason. And he also saw banishment of the gods as a way to, and I quote, turn cold to her suffering and turn away from her misery. So in a way of ending it, it was just, hey, I'm going to banish all the gods instead, and you're not going to have a choice, and you're even going to leave. But, you know, Guthix assumed Saren would leave with this, but as we know, she ultimately decided to shatter herself and stay with the elves.
In other words, he's like, I don't love those hoes.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, as for Juna is the snake-like creature below the Lumbridge Caves that guards the Tears of Guthix, and Juna's world was effectively sacrificed by Guthix, and Guthix said it had to be one world or another. And what happened here is Guthix placed a lure on Juna's world for a, quote, fountain of delicious anima for the blind beast to sniff out. And I here can't help but he's thinking about Tuska, I think. I might be wrong on this. Someone can correct me going forward. So basically what Guthix did is he committed genocide on Juna's homeworld, and in a way to attempt to repay Juna, Guthix grabbed two eggs from that were the remainders of the species Juna and her sister. Then he reveals, quite shockingly, that the egg of Juna's sister did not hatch, and he went off and he buried it somewhere where it will never be found. And he hid this fact from Juna. Juna never knew about it. And if Juna were to find out, Guthix prays that one day she'll be able to forgive him. So here's another really shocking admission from Guthix here.
Well, why do they have to make every god an asshole?
Well, they got to make it so no one can like them to their full extent, right?
So what kind
but
of...
No. Like, why? We liked Guthix. Like, so He
committed genocide.
Created a genocide. And he knew that would happen because Tuska eliminated his world.
It's Tuska. I might be wrong. So let's just run out of that.
Here's a fun fact. Here would be an interesting plot twist. The Juna's sister's egg was buried on Mazcab, and it's actually Yakamaru. It's the spirit. I'll leave that. And I'm not a lore hound, and that kind of popped in my head. So
well, he said it never hatched.
What's that?
He said it never hatched.
Oh, okay.
Well, that doesn't mean it can't be a spirit.
Maybe a spirit. Maybe. Okay. That's an interesting idea.
So, anyway.
That's the beginnings of a lore hound, Dave. You should definitely pursue that.
Oh, man. The Master Quest cape is just, it's like the carrot in front of the horse. It's right there. So close, but so far.
If you decide you like quests and lore, I do have a spot for you in Clan Quest.
Oh, well.
Man. I'm really kind of bummed out. Guthix was the one god you could still like. Like, you know, like I was bummed when they made Sarah Doman kind of have an evil side. I'm like, no, come on. Now they did it with Guthix.
Yeah.
That bums me out, man. That really bums me out.
And, you know, it's, I think, part of the storytelling that they need to do to ensure that they don't have a Zaro situation again, where the guy is shrouded in mystery for so long that it becomes the cool thing to follow him. So.
Just what's happening with the world? Zaro has good parts of him, and Guthix has got bad, and Saren's kind of nutty. I don't know what's going on anymore. What's the sword coming to, Shane?
I don't know. Now, the Sword of Edicts is the next one, and this relates to the barrier that Guthix put up to prevent the gods from coming back. So Guthix ultimately did this to help the people of Gelenor, because he views the inhabitants of Gelenor's worship of gods due to an unquestioning attitude of the humans. So in some ways, he's wanting the humans to become secular so that they can manage on their own rather than just bowing down to a superior entity. And
good luck with that.
Yeah. And as he says also in this memory, he knows that mortal life is brief, at least by his standards, and that most life should not be wasted in the quest of servitude to a god. And he says, life is the reward. It should be spent in joy and discovery in time with loved ones. And I mean, who can argue with that, right? So,
right.
And the rivalries between the so-called gods were a distraction that he wanted to be removed. And as we heard in The World Wakes and Aggie's Memory, the barrier, which is the edicts, split Guthix's focus. He knew the edicts would have to come down at some point and the elder gods would wake up, as we saw at the end of Sliske's endgame. And he also hoped that the waking of the elder gods would cause the mortals to realize their own short lives and start fighting for their survival on their own rather than being, quote, mollycoddled and acting like sheep. That's some Maude Osborne writing there, if I ever, yeah. ever heard it.
Throwing some shade there, maybe. I don't know.
Was there anything in this, or maybe this is like old news, but do we know why he is so much more powerful than all the other gods to where he could banish them and all that stuff?
I'm sorry, I can't provide an authoritative answer on that right now. I would need to go consult with some people on that. So, and I mean, I'm sure any of the people listening from Clan Quest would find that interesting as well, something to think about. So, the memory here ends rather ominously, saying that if allowing their end to come sooner will force them to open their eyes, then so be it.
Well, he's
to be continued.
Kind of ruthless, man.
God.
Like,
quite opposite, actually.
And you can kind of see with this the direction that Jagex was going to go with the sixth age storyline and divination and invention. They were going to be these tools, the humans' awakenings, and maybe a little bit tied in with the godless, their quest to fight back against the gods. Because when Guthix died, he fractured and spread this divine energy throughout the world, and that's what made the divination skill. And invention to be linked to that was to be humans' tools to fight back against the gods. But as we can see right now, invention is good for perking out your weapons, perking out your skilling tools, maybe?
Invention is now a way to fish faster disassemble hand cannons. Oh, sorry, did I say that out loud?
Yeah, I remember that when invention came out.
200 mil first aid, disassembling hand cannons.
Yeah. it does tie in, though, when you think about it, like on a god level, because it allows the humans to create. So this is the first time we've actually been creating something new out of
And I love the concept, and it definitely fits into that that archetype for sure. But I just don't think it played out the way that they wanted it to play out in lore. But yeah, the thought is definitely there, so I can respect that at least.
Yeah, and I think they went in a different direction. They made it character driven around Sliske and whatnot, rather than focusing it around the humans. And the human part might yet come with the elder gods. We'll have to wait and see on that.
And I wonder. Do you think that was a result of the world event when it wasn't the godless that won, was it?
I don't think the godless were an option. Were they?
They were in Tusca.
Well, they
I
were
think.
In Tusca.
Yeah, oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah,
they were,
yeah.
But they didn't win. No.
Okay. I wonder if they had won though. If they would have went more down that road, and since because they said it would have, you know, long lasting implications and it would change the
that's
story.
That's the one that felt rigged from the start.
Yeah,
yeah, I was going to say it quite a bit. The wilderness is never coming back, and we're not getting free trade either. And we're
actually
not
the godless did win, items. You guys. The godless won.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
The other factions were Armadil and Ceridoman and Zamorak against Tuska.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the result here, but yeah, the godless won the latter half of it. So
they did.
Well,
then I guess they just changed their minds and made it.
Ran for 30 days. Godless 120, or Godless 120, Tuska 110 of them.
All right.
And you're right. It did feel rigged from the start. So. See, this was perhaps one of the more interesting memories, this one and the Saren one. Now, moving on to the last one from Krez. Krez was, of course, the automaton defending the area where Guthix was asleep, and Krez was killed in the World Wakes by Commander Zelyana because of a case of mistaken identity. But Krez was also in charge of caching all of Guthix's memories that he had, and ensuring that key time periods such as the Great Revision, the Broken Needle, and the Shadow Eruption would be remembered. Or the Shadow Breach, rather. So, Guthix basically tasked Krez with ensuring that people would remember these, and following beyond that, in the memory here, we learn that we, the World Guardian, have ultimately no choice in the matter, and we're performing this task for everyone. So that's, I mean, that's Jagex's reasoning for us being the World Guardian and pushing us in that general direction. So, not too much learnt from Krez, Aggie, or I think just Krez and Aggie, because the rest of them were pretty hard hitting, especially Saren and Juna, I think. So,
yeah, man, I'm still kind of spinning just because I always looked at Guthix like this Buddha type balance figure. I don't know. That just
proves you need to do evil things sometime to be balanced. You know?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, when you actually think about it, I guess it does make sense because he was lying, but it was, he did a bad thing for a good cause. So I guess we can take that for
what
it's worth.
The ends justify the means, my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
All in context, I suppose.
Exactly. Yeah. So... okay, so that's the lore. So that's what you can look forward to, Tanis, as you progress along. And I I guess you're just going to have to go based on the hover text?
Yeah, that's what I've been doing now that I know.
Yeah, all right.
As long as I can. It's just that they're really quick, so it's quick for me.
Right. And if you fill each of these bots, the five of them, you'll get 50,000 divination XP each time you fill one for the first time. So that's a good reason to do it right there, 250k XP. But after you fill all the bots the first time, you're given a general backup bot. And they're keen on this function of taking backups of memories and whatnot, because they're calling them core memory because that is a part of a computer. So there's a little bit of an inside joke there, core memory fragments and the like. So following that, you basically need to gather 50 of each memory for the backup bot. And then each time you fill in one of these backup bots, you're granted a 10,000 XP divination boost. So when you're training around here, the recommended method is to focus on the pillars of the bots that are close to your divination level. So incandescent if you're 99. And also to fill in up to 50 on the backup memory bot for all of the other memories that you need, because that also provides a boost doing that. Now, doing this and, you know, just doing it kind of a what I'll call a lean back, semi-AFK method of training here, I pulled in around 210,000 XP per hour. And this is with the Elder Divination outfit. If you bring in the full outfit, urns, and clan avatar and whatnot, you can bring that up to 250,000 XP per hour. And if you two-ticket, as we mentioned previously, you can go north of 300k XP per hour before bonus XP factors in. So bonus XP factoring in here, you're easily looking at 600, 650k XP an hour, maybe more.
Divination.
Love it. Pretty hefty, considering.
Yeah, yeah, and
but
I mean,
again, it's pretty lean forward, so I mean, it's not like you're going to be watching Netflix and getting you know, ridiculous numbers. So,
mm-mm. Yeah,
especially if you're two chicken, you have to watch that pop up.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and there are some rewards along the way here for filling in each of the bots for the first time. They're permanent passive effects to divination. So for filling in the Aggie bot, you get an extra passive effect from the Memorial to Guthix Fountain of Energy. Not sure exactly what that's going to come out to be, but it's there. You also get increased memory strand gain while in the Hall of Memories for filling out the Saren bot. If you fill out the Juna bot, you're able to create 3 divine locations per day, which is a lot when you think about it. So that's fun.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm.
Filling out the Sword of Edict bot gives you increased memory gain when harvesting from faded memories, and these are inside of the Hall of Memories, and you can use them to basically craft anything divination-based. Think of them as kind of a wild card form of divination energy. Now, the one that everyone is interested in, when you fill out the Krez bot, you are given an increased energy gain when converting energy on the surface world at doing divination. Now, okay, you guys ready for this?
Yeah, because I got some questions.
Previously, if you fill out a standard, if you got a standard piece of, or standard divination memory and you dump it into a rift, you'll get six energy from it.
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, you get six energy from it after the upgrade. Previously, you would get between two and five. So what they've done is they've significantly lowered the threshold here. If you're throwing in enriched previously, that would give you between 4 and 10. Now, anytime you dump an enriched memory in, you're getting either 8 or 9 energy. And it seems to bounce back and forth. So I'm thinking it's 8.5 and it just
rounds
up. Yeah. So, and when you look at it, what they've effectively done is they've removed the randomness from converting memories to energy. And they've just brought it up to that 80th percentile region on both of them. So everyone who's using this is going to see an increase in their energy gain on the surface world.
What about the Divine Omatic, though? Like, is there still an increase with what you're gathering with that?
Reportedly, yes. There is no way to measure it. That's appearing in your inventory. Tests I was reading from the players did say that they did get more along the way. So, yes, but at the same time, there has been no official confirmation from Jagex that I've seen that does indeed link them. So, you know, Wisdom says that they should be linked, and reports from players say they should be linked. We'll just have to watch this and see. I don't have the Divine-O-Matic, so I wasn't able to test with this yet.
Okay.
But it's definitely
I can't test it either because I've just been down here in this hole. So.
Yeah, you've been working on the first two.
Been wandering around.
I've been wandering around.
Trying to remember where you came from.
Yeah. So we make a great pair here, Shane. I've got a Divine-O-Matic and I can't use it, and you don't have one, and you got all the perks. So there you go.
Yeah. So, and I mean, my only complaint about this update is the two ticking, because, I mean, it's good to have lean forward gameplay. I agree with that. But at the same time, tell us about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is going to put divination in a really interesting spot for our skilling diversity project whenever we look at the divination skill with this.
Yeah, I thought about that when this dropped too, because I've been having, like I said, since I didn't know, since I couldn't see this stuff, like I was thinking, man, this really isn't as good as what I thought it was going to be. But it actually is, because I just need to
optimize it for your level.
So I my only criticism, and like I said, I think this is more of my own expectations than anything wrong with the update, but I really wish there was a little bit more of uniformity with the time on the pillars, because I feel like it's really quick. Like, by the time I find a pillar and I get there, I have to go on to the next. And I mean, I'm all for lean forward. I don't have a problem with two ticking either, but don't make me surge and do bladed dive to get around while I'm skilling.
Yeah,
I
agree totally.
That's a little too much.
There is another thing with this. You can find core memory fragments, and if you put them up on your on the pillars at the back of the room, you can bring forward a random memory and ensure that everyone will harvest from that. So you can make a memory appear in the middle, and you can harvest from those. So that's another method of training there as well. And there's reportedly a friends chat out there that basically calls out where these things are if you want to use that as the method of training as well with this. So,
and yeah. I believe that whenever you harvest the memory that's in the center of the room, it will go off of the highest available energy that you can harvest. Because when I did it, it was harvesting at incandescent rates. So
there's another way to fill out those bots really quickly then.
But I can assure you, I don't know.
Yeah, right. I don't know if it counts as specific energy, but the ticks or the XP drops are equivalent to the highest you can do. But I don't believe it counts as the highest for the bots, but it does fill your jar. So
okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense because I can 100% verify it didn't fill up my bots.
Yeah, yeah. I saw it a few times. Yeah, I misspoke there on the bot. The thing in the middle definitely does not fill the bot. So
no.
Overall, I think it was a good skilling update, and it definitely fits in the realm of what we've seen so far for skilling updates this year. So I really don't have much to complain about with this regarding, except for not telling us about the two ticking off the bat. So
yeah, and divination could use a little something, you know. It needed a little
lean forward. Yeah,
yeah, you know. So I mean, it's cool. It doesn't fit me real well, but it's a good update.
Yep. So no major complaints with this, and it definitely fits within the 5-year plan of skilling and skilling diversity. So all in all, I think that's a good thing that we can be happy about in 2018. So
yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to the patch notes right now. I believe that's what's slotted up next here. So the patch notes this week are definitely something that, you know, each week has their own and not too much, I don't think, of consequence this week, but let's go through them anyways. So the Trapper outfit can now be correctly purchased from Vic the Trader. Okay, apparently that was a problem going forward, is that we couldn't
I feel like
purchase
that's kind
the Trapper
of major,
outfit.
No, it didn't yeah. affect. Didn't affect me. It's kind of
yeah,
considering
that's,
the timed event, you right, kind of want it to.
That's the biggest thing that they brought into Vic this time around.
That's the new thing.
Yeah.
Oops.
messages that relate to easy desert task rewards now correctly refer to Hassan as being in Menaphos now. He has Al-Kharid after the events in the Jack of Spades. Boy, you know, sometimes the sentence structure of these patched outs.
Oh, good lord.
Yeah.
I mean, he has left Al-Kharid after the Jack of Spades. So,
man,
he is in Menaphos now. Solak. Yeah, some Solak changes here with this.
Oh, man.
Yeah, surprisingly, right? So, with this, well, that's weird. I had a scrolling issue there with my page. But anyway, Solak no longer loses focus on the tank after he performs his root attack on the tank. And, you know, this is another one of those sentence structure ones here right now, too, with this, because it basically says Solak no longer loses focus on the tank after he performs his root attack on the tank on phase 2 after a rune has been completed on phase 3.
Wow.
We need a translator. I kind of got lost after the first, I don't know what that means. Yeah.
Solak no longer loses focus on the tank after he performs his root attack on the tank on phase 2, and after a rune has been completed on phase 3? A rune?
It probably makes perfect sense to someone who does Solak.
Well, on phase 3, there are 8 different runes on the ground. It's very poor wording considering a rune is an object in the game. They mean a rune as in something you stand on. It's a circle on the ground. Yeah. So they could have used a better word choice for that.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Solak will now reliably hit all players for the insta-kill attack if players allow Withered Solak to die with a group member in a different instanced area. So I'm guessing what this means is if one is in his brain or in his mind and the others are on the surface world, it will properly insta-kill now.
Yeah.
Defensive abilities will no longer be reset during the Solak phase transitions and when traversing from the mind to the overworld. Oh, that could have been a nice little glitch there that some people could have utilized. An issue with Solak awarding double kill count has been fixed.
Oh,
I wonder how you stumbled upon that.
Oh my god.
Portents of Restoration can no longer be used to heal the players inside Solak's minds. Calorie bombs can no longer be placed inside the mind of Solak. And of course, calorie bomb is the massive heal that combines a bunch of fish together. You can just eat from it. See, and these are these little interesting edge cases that when you're designing a boss and you can only play test it with seven people and you don't have the entire player base pounding away at it, you can't really imagine these kind of things coming forward. So,
well, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering, but I guess that makes more sense. It's like with some of these bug fixes, not just with Solak, but with anything, you wonder, like, okay, how much did you actually test this? Because some of the things are like, okay, this, like the core mechanics of this don't work, or they're not performing how we want them to. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yep. Continuing then. The blight percentage on phase two of Solak will now be drained at a faster rate. And, of course, we talked about that with David when he was on the show to give his Solak overview. Now, some audio from Nex Angel of Death encounter has been removed from Solak. And this is an interesting point, because what this means to me is that the Solak fight first started out as a copy-paste of Nex Angel of Death, and they just took that and modified mechanics going forward from that. Hence why you get some of this Nex Angel of Death audio creeping in.
Yeah.
So just a fun little tidbit for those of you guys out there. Now, moving on to the ninja fixes, there were a bunch of quest requirement changes this week to the early quests involving herb lore and summoning. Rune mechanics will no longer require rune mysteries and wolf whistle. What lies below, lunar diplomacy, and avoid dance, and fairy tale 3 no longer require rune mysteries, while avoid dance no longer requires wolf whistle, and fairy tale 3 also no longer requires wolf whistle. Deadliest Catch now requires 3 herb lore instead of druidic ritual because you brew a sea legs potion. And Meeting History will now require 3 herb lore instead of druidic ritual because you name the herb lore skill in that quest. So basically what we're seeing...
We can't have any spoilers, you know, because nobody looks at their skilling skilling tab before they make it.
Yeah, right.
And the bigger thing with this is that we have to remember now that people can train the herb lore and summoning skills without... doing those introductory quests, because those are member quests, and people in free-to-play can train to level 5 in all these skills now.
So yeah.
That's the reason.
So is that where... Okay, so I was wondering, like, where all these quest patches came from. I'm like, what are they gearing up for? What's going on here?
Yeah, and I think it's just streamlining the new player experience, so... Yeah.
That's good.
And warning message about forfeiting rewards when entering Nyakamuru after defeating Beastmaster Jirzag will no longer incorrectly appear. See, and this is, you guys who listen to the Weekly Bite every week, you'll know that sometimes it might sound as though I'm stumbling or there might have been an edit point in there. It's because the sentence structure of some of these patch notes is just not natural.
Yeah, they may need to get someone else to like write the patch notes, maybe.
I think devs are just pasting in their fix notes.
they might not be sticky notes on their monitor. They're just typing them out.
It's now possible to teleport from the Telos Arena once it has been defeated. And being ineligible to vote in a poll will no longer display you as having voted in the poll. And interesting one about this is because this week they're running the little Tuzzy revote that they talked about from the... I believe it was the last round of ninja fixes. They didn't want people who hadn't killed the boss voting in it. But you'll recall last time it lost by 1 percentage point. This time it's only winning by 1 percentage point. So not too much of a difference there. So that was an interesting thing to see. Reward changes moving to lamps now. The Grand Tree now awards an agility, combat, and magic lamp. And, you know, that's good because there might be a skiller who wants to do the Grand Tree somehow and not get the XP for it. Royal Trouble will now reward an agility, slayer, and constitution lamp. Death to Dorgashin now awards a thieving and combat lamp. And the Observatory quest will reward a crafting lamp and potentially a strength, defense, and constitution or attack lamp depending on what you do in the quest. So once again, we're shifting off to lamps here. Now, this is perhaps my biggest patch note of the week, is that an agility shortcut to enter the Tree Gnome Stronghold has been added near the Eagle's Peak Lodestone, requiring 61 agility. So rather than running to the Ardoyan Lodestone and running north or running to the Fishing Guild, you can just now lodestone to Eagle's Peak and come in through the west into the Tree Gnome Stronghold. I like this
patch note. This should have been a priority over Prif, just saying. This is more important than Prif. This is like needed to be done in like 2005.
Yeah.
So I am very happy to see this. Yeah, exactly.
So, the functionality for reward shops to have a buy X option has been implemented. Now speaking of Prif, Dave here, they tweaked the Prifdina's lodestone colors to better match the surrounding area. Apparently there were complaints that it was off.
It was like gray, and it looked like the Edgeville one, but now it's white and gold and stuff, so it does fit. I can see that.
All right, that's fair. You can now destroy Clockwork Cats from your inventory.
You couldn't do that before?
I guess not.
That's weird. Okay.
Apparently,
no, you will have this cat forever.
Oh, the little buggers.
When you try to destroy it, Sarah McLachlan comes on. In the ash of an angel.
Adopt now.
This poor little kitty.
For only 10 cents a day.
You can wind up this cat.
God. Because that's what we want. Now that our show comes back on, we're keeled over on the floor bawling our eyes out. But at least we can, you know, destroy our clockwork cat.
I don't like cats. But there you go.
After this update, Shade's going to go get a full inventory of Clockwork Cats and just destroy them all in his inventory while
he's
laughing.
There you go.
That'll be on the weekly bite. Little outtake. Oh, gosh.
You can now attack Firewatch when they demand tithe, so long as you have an appropriate weapon equipped, such as the Ivandis Flail.
Okay. Oh, that's sweet. Tie this.
Why is this necessary?
It's not, but it's kind of fun.
Fair enough. And finally, it is now possible to teleport to the Arret within Curadil's dungeon with the Mask of the Arret.
That's probably my favorite right there.
Yeah. You guys like Arrets for Slayer tasks?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're one of my top ones. They're real quick. If you have a two-hander, you can just go to town.
How do you avoid the special attack, then?
Kill it quickly.
put some tetsu on and eat it.
I usually just put tank armor on, and honestly, they really don't special me because I kill them so fast.
I mean, the only time it's a problem is if you get, like, if you're in close quarters and you're using your scythe, you don't want to get, like, three of them on you and do the special at the same time. That can be a problem. But for the most part.
I mean, granted, obviously, I'm using, like, holy overlords and I'm going full, like, sweaty mode, but yeah. That's basically been my strategy.
Arrets are good, man. The rune, the arret bones. I usually crush the bones because I just run my bone crusher and my Demonheim necklace. But yeah, they're great XP. Good money.
Interesting. All right. I won't skip them next time then.
Mm-mm. Cutting yourself short there.
All right. So that's it for the patch notes this week. You know, pretty big, all things considered, but I don't think there's anything that we can say is going to be a patch of the month or patch of the year at this point. So,
yeah, nah.
All right, next up is the summer pinatas are here. If you guys noticed that being the current treasure hunter promotion, so from June 14th to the 18th, these pinatas will be around for free. And the idea behind this is that you will gain access to the title short sword and title offhand sword for free if you open up the treasure hunter promotion during this time. So they're giving you the weapons for free, and here you can see a photo of how this title outfit looks, and I think it looks pretty good. I mean, it's definitely very summer-themed, watery, I guess you could say. So, I don't know why you'd want to be 100% blue, but there you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, with these pinatas, you can also share them with people, and people can hit them as many times as they'd like, and you can receive up to 5 rewards a day, and you can get rewards like stars, lamps, springs, and many other treasure hunter things as well with these. So
well, that's cool. But do we get a sombrero?
No, I don't think so.
Well,
Camel, now it's ruined.
Yeah, Camel Pinata without a sombrero.
And for a moment I was wondering where the screenshot was, but it's actually the memorial to Guthix, this screenshot, and just amazing seeing that visual there.
Yeah, it's still a nice looking place if you go out there and you got your graphics turned up. It's nice.
Yeah, and you know, I think they're doing a good thing with these pinatas because, you know, they've done the pinatas before in the winter, and they have resulted in rares coming out of them. And I think it's good to, you know, keep those rares limited to the Christmas time and whatnot. So
yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a good, for sure. It's just another good way of distributing treasure hunter mechanics without forcing people to you know, just get it directly on Treasure Hunter, even worse, grind a skill for, you know, who knows how long.
So. Or be on every day to get your, you know, currency.
Yep. Yeah, I'm glad we've seen a decline in those.
Yeah, because for a while it was every week.
Yep.
Like every week there was another one.
All right, so the news most people are probably wanting to hear about, aside from the divination update, and that is that there was indeed a mining and smithing content showcase this week. And, you know, the mining and smithing beta is progressing along. They've started implementing the mechanics and whatnot in the surface world here. Overall, the target is later this year to ship. And yeah, they said, if we don't ship by the end of the year, then we'll be in trouble. So.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're looking at this at the last quarter, maybe?
Yeah, definitely. November, December, mm-hmm. Probably. I'd say November, because it's not like Jagex to want to ship a large update before the Christmas break and leave it unattended over, you know, that 2-week period at the end of the year. So. So what have we learned this week? Let's see. Rock hit splats. They've added to know when you critically hit the rock, and see to know when you can hit the rock again. Once again, that dynamic gameplay there, lean forward. They've added more mining sites and rocks throughout the world as well. They actually did release a map on these for this. I'll pull that up in just a moment. But if you're looking at the world map right now, or if you're looking at the world map in game with after the mining and smithing beta, what you'll effectively see is you'll be able to mouse over a mining spot, and with that you'll be able to see what kind of rocks are at that mining spot. So there's no more guessing if it's rune or whatever it might be. It's all there on the world map. So I found that really interesting.
Yeah, it's really nice.
And you know, there's not too many in the wilderness, but they have laid it out so that there are the Bane ores in the wilderness and up near the Majorat area and whatnot as well. So it seems pretty well thought out in terms of the mining sites with this. What do you guys think based on what you saw from the mining sites here?
Well, I mean, I think it makes sense to have the Bane up there, because right now the only place you can get Bane is in the Glacier Cave, right?
Yep.
So that's one thing. I don't know how I feel about, like, letting that go, because that Bane ore is kind of a reward for that humongous quest line. But I guess they know best when it comes to that, so I'm not going to. I guess I won't question that.
Yeah, and but, I mean, the only other Bane spots that I can see right now are around that ritual site in the wilderness and on the Daemonheim Peninsula.
Okay. We're going to have something on the Daemonheim Peninsula other than Daemonheim, huh?
Yep. That's cool. Pretty much.
All right.
And, you know, you can basically look at the map here, but it's actually a really huge map, so much so that my browser's actually having trouble with it right now. But all the sites as they're working with right now in the beta are on this list here. and you can kind of see where they're all at. You know, you can see the updated locations of Rune and whatnot going forward. So there's some Phasmatite by Port Phasmatis and whatnot as well. So that was also heavily highlighted during this. That is the locations of all the ore. But also with this, we saw in this live stream that ore will be available in areas now that are not locked behind quests. So in theory, you'll be able to go from level 1 to 99 mining and be able to access all the ore without doing any quests. So that's something they're incredibly cool. happy about.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. I just, it is different, you know, because, gosh, that ritual quest line takes a long time to get. And for a long time, that remember, like, that was one of the things with the rune dragons, because you have to have access to the Bane. So they were kind of gated that way, too. So,
that'll be interesting.
Yeah, so there's, like I said pre-show, there's going to be a little bit of growing pains. I think it's good, but there's definitely, it's definitely different in some ways.
Yeah. Now some examples that they've also given about the naming and the lore behind these. Light Animica is related to gods, in particular a god death or the injury of gods. So it doesn't mean there's like a god buried there. It's just mean that this might be a former battle site or something. So that's kind of interesting. Dark Animica is Animica that has been corrupted by the Shadow Realm. So once again, we're truly in the Sixth Age with this rework here. Now, in regards to the smithing side of it, Burial Armor is the decorated armor that we saw in the first beta, and I think we talked about the Burial Armor and whatnot, how they were changing that, and it's going to be a central figure of the Artisan's Workshop.
Yeah, so they definitely found a way to keep the Artisans in. So.
Yeah, and you know, cool. It feels like kind of a de facto smithing guild, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they might as well just make it a smithing guild, but yeah, because it does feel like that, and it's basically that and everything but name only. They're even keeping the swords too.
Yep. Now, also with this, they created a new interface for smithing inside the smithing guild because they started with the Make X interface, but it wasn't strong enough. So basically what happens now is you'll see the core metals on the left-hand side of the interface and then advanced metals down below. And when you click on one of those, you'll be presented with all the different things you can make on the right-hand side of that interface. So you'll select what you want to make, say a rune square or something like that, and you'll be able to choose the level that you'll want to make with it, you know, base, plus one, plus two, plus three, or burial in that case. And then you'll, quote, begin the project rather than just have it being a standard Make X interface with this. So that's the way they're going about that. And, you know, it's an entirely new interface. So I see this interface right now. It's big. It's big compared to the Make X interface. It's about double the size. So my question is, how is that going to work for RS Mobile?
Good question. Yeah, I was wondering what you thought about that, because when I saw it, I was like,
it looks confusing, but I mean, if you look at it, I think all they need to do to reduce the confusion of it is add a separator, like a visual separator between the metals on the left, mm-hmm. what you're going to make in the middle, and then the data, like the requirements and the XP and the level of that on the right-hand side. I think that's all that they need to do to change that out.
That would help a lot, because I think the functionality of it is good and what they were trying to do. But I never can tell when it comes to an interface like that, because I'll wait to see what Shane and Sirion has to say on those matters.
Now, also with this, the ore box thing that we talked about in the beta, how it just appeared in your inventory. Now you need to make your own ore box and level it up using the actual smithing skill as you go. So it's not something that everyone's going to have. And it's basically going to be your own little ore deposit box. So it's going to be something you can actually bank now and whatnot. There were questions in the stream asked about if it should go on the tool belt. Jagex said no, because, I mean, it's an ore box. It's basically an extension of your inventory. And you're going to be dumping it in your bank potentially. So. Now, they said, what are you going to do about the dragons, and in particular, the dragons, the metal dragons? So what they're doing with this is they're offering something called mining geodes from the various levels of dragons, and these are going to be a chance at granting rarer rewards to players when they're mining, rather than just dropping, you know, the bars and whatnot. So that's the way they're getting around that. What do you guys think about that idea? Because this is, you know, something that hasn't been prototyped yet and presented to the players.
I don't know. I didn't realize that was in regards to the metal dragons. I thought that was something they're just adding to skilling in general, but
is it kind of like a fire making spirit type deal?
Yeah, kind of, but it would be dropped by every dragon.
Right?
But it would be dropped by every dragon in replacement of the metal bars.
Oh, okay. So every metal dragon.
Oh, sorry. These are ore spirits. Sorry. The mining geodes are something else.
Okay. I thought I was mixed up there. I'm like, I thought that was in general. Okay.
Yeah, I got the names mixed up. Okay, so mining geodes are indeed something that they give to improve the rewards while mining. So there's that.
Okay.
I think that's good, but ore spirits from metal dragons.
What are they supposed to be giving us?
Well, basically the idea behind this is that it would be double charges for ore when you're mining. So it would make your mining faster.
I don't think anyone, are they sellable? Are they, I mean, unless they're tradable, then that's not going to matter. No one's doing metal dragons because they want a skilling boost. That misses the point.
That's a good point. Yeah, so are the ore spirits tradable? That is a good question. We will have to seek clarification on that. Because, I mean, if you just look at a task of, say, adamant dragons, that's big, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and even, you know, a rune dragon task. I mean, think about 100 rune bars. That's some cash.
Yeah, and they do say they want to keep rune bars relevant, because what you're going to need to do is you're going to need to make the Elder Rune bar, you're going to need a rune bar, light Animica ore, and dark Animica ore, and combine those with a rune bar. So that's the idea, how they keep the current rune economy going.
Right. So. Well, and when it comes to like the dragons, when it comes to dropping something like that, I don't understand why they couldn't have just done what they're doing with the weapons and everything else, where they're just making a different version of that, and it's that you can only alk, you know what I mean? Like you can only alk or disassemble something like, but it's a different, like you could have done that with the bars, called them something different, you know, where they didn't. No, you couldn't smith them or anything.
Right. Well, I mean, at that point, if you could just alk it, I mean, why not just drop the coins instead? It's just kind of...
Well, yes. Well, and I've been an advocate of that, too. I mean, no, right. I agree.
So it sounds like we have a lukewarm reception here to ore spirits.
It just seems like it's not addressing the issue per se, for lack of a better word. It's kind of counterintuitive, because you're giving a skilling boost for something that's done for money. And if it's basically the caveat is it tradable? If it's tradable, then awesome. But if not, you know, that's very Iron Man-y.
Yeah. And even if it's tradable, it has to be the right amount.
And is it addressing the right problem? Because previously, when you fight a metal dragon, you're getting bars, but if they're extra charges for mining, that's ore.
You're going back a step.
I just feel like there's too many questions with that one. Like, I have a lot of questions about that one.
And I mean, at this point, it was just an idea. It hasn't been designed in full, so we'll have to watch and see what comes from that. So, all right. Let's see what was next. The coal auto heater. We talked about that before. Basically, the auto heater is something that will come from the Dungeoneering reward shop. It'll add more heat to your low heat threshold, and zero heat smithing that was in the beta will still be a thing. It'll be incredibly slow, though.
I'm glad they kept that, though. That's good.
Yeah, and my main issue with this when it first came out is that it was absolutely linked to Dungeoneering, but now there's an option to smith like this without tying it to Dungeoneering, so that's good.
Well, and hey, Dungeoneering isn't going to be as painful by the end of the month, right?
Yeah, the Elite Dungeons. Should have two of them, if not three of them, out by then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Fire making will still increase your heat level. New ores and bars will not be on the drop tables of monsters. They said that from the very beginning, but they are going to be pressing through with that.
Do we get a clap?
Yeah. I was going to say, this is honestly the biggest part of this and the most important. Like, even if it's really, there's no opinion about it. I guess there could be, but this is literally huge. This is the make or break of the whole entire rework, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean,
it's a biggie.
And I mean, just making the top level armors and whatnot usable.
Right.
So that's good.
Yeah, they're definitely making the skilling is going to be profitable, but will different parts of the community throw such a
crazy we're gonna get to that in just a minute.
You know what I mean? Like that's the only thing.
Yeah. So now here's going to be another point of contention here. The spring cleaner is not going to be as profitable. It's getting a rework, two new modes, either auto elk or auto disassemble, and will only work with items dropped by this update.
See, I love my spring cleaner. I go nowhere without it because anything that can clean up my drops is good for me. So I don't lose stuff. But I actually thought that was a really good solution and a good compromise. Like I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Also, on the note of refactoring old things, the coal bag will disappear, and everyone who bought it from Dungeoneering will have their tokens refunded, so they're not going to force the auto heater on people if they don't want it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's good, too.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. There's 100-plus things that need to be fixed before this update can possibly be taken to another beta. An example of this was given that there might be a quest there where there's a rock in a wall in a quest, like a piece of ore. And if you mine that, the game could just crash. So those are the kind of things they need to go through. And they said this list of 100-plus things is that some of them are really simple to fix, but some of them need clarification from other teams. Some of them need thoughtful design behind them. So that's why it's going to take so long to get to another beta by the end of the quarter. So with that being said, we need to basically look at this and accept that we're not going to see actual playable sides of the beta until it's almost ready to ship. So there's that. They clarified the rune economy, the rune bar economy, so that's still going to be a thing going forward. So my biggest piece of advice to people out there before this update drops, stack up on the rune bars that we got now. Because Elder Rune, and we talked about how long it'll take to make some of these Elder Rune pieces of armor, will require the light Animica, the dark Animica, and the existing rune bars that are in-game. So stock up on those rune bars.
Mm-hmm.
Tier 90 Masterwork armor will be power armor and is extremely expensive. The tier 92 upgraded armor does require your Torva piece. So they are keeping the Torva link in there with that. So that'll be a way to ensure to people that they are going to be staying true to, I guess, to everything that they have talked about before with this update. So that's, I think that's okay to rely on Torva for fine. The tier 90 smithable armor. So,
yeah, that's fine. Well, because that's what makes it the tier 92, right? We can smith the tier 90, and then the Torva is what makes it the tier 92.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Traherrin hour. They said this depends on community response, but if it's going to take too long to fix, they're not going to launch with it. So,
yeah.
I know, Tanis, you were talking about this before. What do you use Trehearne Hour for? They mentioned it as a community experience to find harmonized rocks, and because of that, they feel that they might not need it.
Yeah, they're looking at the means. They're not looking at the end. I'm sorry, but nobody does Trehearne Hour because they want to hang out and socialize. It's about the money, Lebowski. Come on. It's always the money. That's why people do Trehearne Hour. I know people that use two or three alts for Trehearne Hour. You can make decent money. Like, you can make a couple mil off one Trehearne Hour. You know, that's two or three times a day. It's about the money. And I think they've totally missed it with that. So people have to adjust to it. I mean, there's going to be some adjustments to this. It's for the best. It's really good. But people are going to have to, are going to give up some things in order to get some things. You know what I mean? Like, we're getting smithable T90 armor, but you will be giving up some things. That may be one of them.
It's my bet that within the first couple of weeks of the skill, you will be able to make more money from smithing the armor than you will be from any Trehearne Hour that you can possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Even if Trehearne Hour was 24 hours a day.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. But you know how people are with change. They're gonna mm-hmm. get testy at first before they realize that.
But all the rocks are harmonized, so you don't need it.
Exactly. I think it's a wonderful change, but I don't know, man. I just know people better than that.
The RuneScape community. Yeah. The RuneScape community, all right. Okie dokie. All right, so next up on this list of things here, double XP or no ore pickaxe that was on the beta server. That's not happening. They decided that would be too powerful, so that will not be happening in this update going forward.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, that was the only questionable thing I thought that was in the beta at all. So I think it's probably a good choice. It's probably the right choice. Because if you want something like that, you I don't know. I don't know if this will work, but the dwarven tools are what do that now.
That's right.
You can
that's
choose. Right. So, you know.
Okay, ready for the next big one?
Let's hear it.
So the update here proposes that the smithable tank armor not be degradable. We already have that in game with most of the smithable armor that we have today. But the Combat Council will not sign off on the Tier 90 non-degradable tank armor to be non-degradable, as they want to design with this update. The Combat Council will not sign off on that.
I mean, it's understandable.
Masterwork armor will degrade, but the Elder Rune armor that the Combat Council is concerned about will have Tier 80 stats, even though it's Tier 90. And
it's Tier 90, why has it got Tier 80 stats?
And see, this was the first concession that they made to the combat side of the game, was that we're going to put this Tier 90 armor in game, but it's not going to be as good as the other Tier 90 armor that you can get.
So then it's not Tier 90.
Yeah, what's the point? Why use that instead of my God Wars 2 stuff or my Tetsu or ports?
And see, the point of that, It'll actually be really close to Tetsu, and they said they might need to find another thing that Tetsu can do with this. So the point of this is that why is the Combat Council not signing off on this?
I don't know. This,
and why,
that really
is, why does the Combat Council have a veto, right?
Yeah.
I think it's worded improperly. I think it shouldn't degrade to dust like we were discussing in pre-show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's just the verbiage there, not degraded dust. I definitely think it should be degradable. If it wasn't degradable, that would be way too OP. I completely agree. We cannot have a Tier 90 Sparrows set that doesn't degrade. It can degrade, and maybe it costs twice as much as it would, you know, to repair something else, but it definitely needs to degrade, just not, like, completely destroyed.
So. Yeah, totally agree.
But
totally agree.
I can't get over this. It's got 80 stats. I was really looking forward to making
stuff. It's going to be close to Tetsu, you know, 85-ish, give or take.
But I can make Tetsu all day long. Like, what good is that?
Right, and you see, that brings up the question, Why is the Combat Council concerned about this? We have already given in many concessions on this armor as it is right now.
I don't know. Why do they get a veto on everything?
Yeah. And, I mean, you're not going to reach that point that they wanted where skills will be profitable if this kind of thing happens. And it sets that precedent.
Yeah.
Well, and what? Well, like I said, here's the other thing. What's the point? What is the point? Like, if, like, seriously, why are you going to buy the new armor that's going to be expensive and takes forever to make when you literally could go out and buy, what is it, the inferior set of Tetsu? Have the same thing?
So like there's a combat council. Is there a skilling council?
The skilling council does exist, according to Mod Ryan, but they haven't been introduced, and there's no form for them or anything.
Huh. So basically they don't exist as far as I'm concerned.
As far as the player
until they have, until they can have the power that this so-called combat council has, we'll see about that.
And that just kills a huge part of that update.
Right. Being able to smith that high level armor.
Yeah. That was like one of the main goals. I'm sorry, but level 80 armor, that's not high level. I can go out and buy any of the God Wars 2 sets under probably like 20 mil. Now, how much you think it's going to cost with all the rune that you have to have, all the supplies you have to have, and then all the time it's going to take to smith it? It won't be viable. Like, it doesn't... That's not right. That is not right.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, you do also have the Tier 92 Masterwork Armor. Or sorry, the... what is it called? I always get these confused here, you know?
That requires Torva, so
the one
I mean,
that requires Torva, the Tier 92.
Is that even going to be Tier 90 stats?
The Tier 92 Power Armor.
Are we on Tier 90 stats? Like...
Your guess is as good as mine at this point.
Oh, and you know what? There's a precedent for like having something be a higher
Masterwork armor.
Okay,
but like the only thing is the one that will degrade.
So that degrade. You know, and I agree with Dave. It can degrade. Just don't degrade the dust. That's fine. I don't care. But I'm really worried about these stats now because I did not realize they were nerfing
it. Yeah, it's not going to be 100%
Tier
90. No, no, no.
It was not even close.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not even close.
That was in the original design doc, actually.
Really? Because I didn't realize it was 80.
Well,
like, that's...
I think it's closer to Tetsu. I don't think it's 80. We'll have to double check on that.
But Tetsu is 80.
Yeah, it really just comes down to why are you making something Tier 90 if it's... literally not Tier 90. Like, the tier of armor or weapon is the stats. Not like, oh, it looks cool, it's Tier 90, or it's more expensive. No, it's more expensive because it's the stats. Everything is reliant on the underlying stats. So if it's Tier 80 stats, it's Tier 80 armor. I mean, I really don't feel like there's much of an argument there.
No, you're exactly right. Totally agree.
Yeah, it definitely sounds
Man,
like
really
we need more clarification on this.
Mm-hmm.
Because from what was said on this, actually, we can do this. Hang on. I got a way to solve this. I got a way to solve this right here. We're going to hear it directly from the source.
And it permanently unlocks your character, so they can now store.
So talking
that type
about the
metal in
the ore box now.
Do you see any set effects coming for these armors at all?
We're not planning on any. We might conceivably have to add one to Masterwork or upgraded Masterwork if we just can't get it to be good enough. But at the moment, we don't see any need for that.
So they might need to add a set effect to Masterwork if it can't be good enough, but they don't see that happening right now. All right, so that's where we're at right now. This is directly from the live stream.
The smithable ones wouldn't be competitive even with set effects, so we're not looking at that.
The smithable ones below would not be competitive with set effects, so they're not looking at it for below 90.
Oh man, we're rattling off questions.
This is great. Oh, and tentatively, another one I saw, the smithable armors won't be degradable, but we undecided about the masterwork
we haven't
upgraded masterwork yet.
Those,
All right. So smithable armors under tier 90 won't be degradable, but they're undecided about the masterwork at 90 and the upgraded masterwork, which would be at 92. So that's directly from the source on that, and we'll let them finish that thought.
Those ones definitely will degrade. We haven't got the Combat Council to agree to the smithable ones not degrading.
Okay, I thought we...
No, sure, they haven't agreed to it. I'm hoping they will.
So your proposal is tier 90, smithable, doesn't degrade.
Doesn't degrade, because it's not competitive with power armor anyway. Right. It would be an interesting niche for it.
Okay. Also, the Elder Rune armor won't be of tier 90 value?
No, that's true. No, it only has tier 80 stats. Yes.
There you go, it has tier 80 stats.
Yep. Well,
so yeah. The masterwork armor at 90 that they want to not be degradable, and the upgraded one, which I think we can all agree the upgraded one should be allowed to be degradable because it has Torva in it, right? So that's fine.
No, that's fine.
But the masterwork armor at tier 90 that is smithed by a player that is going to have tier 80 stats, the Combat Council wants to be degradable, but these guys want it to be 100% permanent, a tier 80 piece of armor.
It doesn't matter anyway. It's tier 80. It's
no one is going to use this armor.
No, it's undercutting everything they're trying
to
do.
And no one is going to make it if it degrades.
No. They were supposed to be making, this was supposed to be making smithing like actually viable and worth it. And no one's going to do this. Like, they're wrong. I'm sorry, but they're wrong on this.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you will be able to.
So it's upgradable to 85, which is the same as Tetsu, I think.
Upgradable to 85, same as Tetsu.
What about two edge cases in mining? If this is okay.
Okay, so I'll just go buy malevolent armor. Like,
yeah. What's the point? Seriously, what is the point of all that work? Like, nothing. This isn't going to make skilling better.
I guarantee it. The Combat Council just, it doesn't want that because it wants to focus on, we need to make more bosses, so we need to keep the PVM community alive. You know, all 300. Sorry, that was...
Yeah,
just, low, but, you know, it is what it is.
It doesn't make any sense to me. It goes against what they're trying to do.
Everything you can have caveats, you can have but this, but that, but this. Okay, that's cool, that's awesome, but it's numbers. Numbers do not lie. It has to line up. If you're gonna call it tier 90, call it tier 80 and make it, you know, you can't make it until 90. Like, even if that's the case, that's fine. Just call it what it is. If you don't want to make tier 90 smithable armor, then don't call it tier 90.
Because it's not.
No.
Nothing about that. I mean, they don't even want to put a set effect on it. Really?
Yeah.
See, this is one issue you guys are describing, but to me, the bigger issue is that the Combat Council has a veto over this.
Right. Well, and I think that's inherent that is a problem. Because, again, like, where's the Skilling Council? Why can't there be balance? Why does Combat get to veto out something for Skilling? Why can't Skilling say, no, F this, we don't want Solak, this is stupid, this is way too hard, you know, something like that. I'm sorry, but it's where is it? I mean, they claim there's one, but if they don't have a forum or they don't have, you know, they haven't been introduced, okay, they don't exist. That's fine. It's not up to the par of the so-called Combat Council, so let's sort of get some balance here. And, you know, we can play the checks and balances, because with vetoes needs to be checks and balances. But what do I know?
Well, I don't understand what – I mean, this is almost like – a reflection of what we deal with all the time.
It's going back to the same old.
Yep. It's the same old, same old. And we're giving, so Combat gets a veto. So they obviously have the final say, which to me sounds, it doesn't make any sense when you think about it, because some people enjoy Combat, right? Okay. But I don't think this is like a controversial statement to say RuneScape is not like the epitome of combat games.
Yeah,
no. Like, in the MMO world, you know what I'm saying?
If this veto does end up happening, these guys who are doing the smithing update need to go to the lead designer for RuneScape, who I think is Mod Osborne at this point in time. I think. It might still be Mod Mark, but I think it's Osborne, and get him to make a decision on this. Because it needs to be a decision that is made for the game and be precedent setting.
Yeah, and it speaks
volumes make sense for two equal level teams to be overriding each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, yeah, it's undercutting all their work. Like, look at how long that team has been working. Like, if you give these T80 stats, you've undercut all of their work. Because, for one, smithing isn't that viable anymore. In fact, it's just slower. Thanks a lot. You're not going to get the money out of it. None of it. Like, you've just destroyed their months of hard work because you're protecting your community, which is great, but it's not great for the game.
It really speaks volumes of where Jagex wants the game to go, if they have an entire council dedicated to this and give it so much power. And I mean, when you think of it, it's kind of conflict of interest. Like, obviously the bossing people want to work on bosses. They want to release stuff that skills can't get. You know, it's like there's a conflict of interest there that I don't think they're realizing. It's like, okay, you know, if I run a snowplow business, obviously I'm going to boycott somebody that is selling, you know, road salt or road chemicals. Like, it's job security in a kind of weird sense. So there's a conflict of interest there that is like, okay, obviously the combat staff is going, or combat council is going to veto something that brings skilling up to par because combat wants to be superior. You know, it beating a dead horse.
They're already superior. This is what pisses me off. Okay. You already need the Torba. You already need a component that comes from combat. It comes from doing Nex to make this
upgraded
version. So right. Where does it end? Like, I feel like that's a pretty good compromise. Right. Like, that brings both sides together. We should be coming together. Like, why are you spitting in our face? Like, it doesn't.
And on top of all that, it's only 85, which you can do from a month of ports, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh. Anyway.
Wow, I didn't even see this coming. That's a good catch thing, because I didn't even... I've watched that stream twice, and I didn't hear that 80s. Like, and now I'm fired up now. I'm like, it's too late at night for me to be this fired up. Yeah. But I can't believe it. Wow.
Yeah, well, that's why it's important to read the documentation and follow along, you know, with what's happening here. So, and I mean, you're right. They got it all in the tier 92 armor that's going to be degradable and whatnot. So it's not that much of an issue. So, but you know, we'll definitely be watching this, and I think this has provided some good, valuable discussion with this. So I'm pleased that we were able to do that, because at this point, I'd be interested to see where the community falls on this, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. So just wrapping this up quickly, we already talked about the dragon scales and that coming from Metal Dragons beta by the end of the year. We talked about why that is, and untradeable benefit like overload. Okay. Now, this is something else that was also in early design phase, but, you know, the idea they have for this is that it'll be a consumable, cheap-to-make item that requires 90, but will be upgraded. The higher you go in smithing, all the way to 99, it'll provide a kind of thorns effect, so that whenever something hits you with within melee range, it will damage them back. So in a way, it's kind of like a damage reflection. It feels like a thorn in that regard.
Kind of like a perked ring of recoil.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
I can get behind that. I think every skill needs a untradeable high-level benefit.
Yeah,
why else would you get it?
And I mean, it is for melee, right? And anytime you're using melee, it will help out. So,
and we talked about, like, that was the only thing we thought was missing, you know, from before. So
it just feels kind of it doesn't feel at the same level as overloads for me. I need to see the full design document before they do this.
I agree, but just in the sense that we actually have some really good rings, so this needs to, when, you know what I mean, you'd have to have a reason to wear this over. you know, like the Duff's ring or...
I don't know if it would be a ring, though. Like the dwarf. I think it might just be kind of like a... maybe like an aura effect that you put on your character. Not necessarily an aura, per se. I can't use that word because there are auras in-game. But
right.
Like a consumable, like in a weird sort of sense of the way, like the ham logo you could put on different things.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe, or something like that, that you would, you know, just click on when you begin.
Apply, or, yeah.
To like a badge, maybe.
Hey, maybe it could be in the sigil spot.
Hey, there you go.
There we go.
Fill out
okay.
that piece
okay.
of content, would you?
Yeah. Make a, new sigil. All right.
We already talked about the coal bag. Final question was regards to the goldsmithing gauntlets. They'll likely just be remade into smelting gauntlets because what you need to do now is you fire the bar and then you need to take those bars and then put it into the furnace. This would just bypass that and put it directly into the hopper for you.
Works for me.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's because of the way they change the way it works. So... All right, so that's it for the RS segment of the podcast. You guys have anything else on this Q&A?
No, I'm... Man, I'm just so surprised. I didn't see that coming. I just didn't see it coming. Like, I loved this update. I loved the beta. I was just like, yeah, everything's going great. I can't really believe I didn't even hear the T80 stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you guys want to follow along with update as we go along each week, the patch notes and learn a bit about what each of the week's updates will have as part of it, you can do that by following the Weekly Byte every Monday on the YouTube channel at youtube.com/rsbnb. So we'll see you then on Mondays. So moving on to the questions right now, we got a discussion question this week from Tycho. He says, "Dear RSBNB, you have now passed 670 episodes of RSBNB Update. That's a very long time, considering the show is released once a week. My questions today for all you listeners who hasn't been listening to Shane's voice over the years and want to know the history behind the show. First, how did it all begin, and how did the first episodes of RSBNB Update go? Secondly, do you feel you had any personal development during the many years running the show? And in third place, on several occasions you have mentioned this is a direction I do not want this podcast to head towards regarding the feedback of certain updates. Can you explain a little bit more about the guidelines or goals the podcast has? And lastly, will we ever hear the answers of all those topics and questions that end with, that's a topic for another day. I've lost count for how many times we have gotten these cliffhangers and that never gets finished. I guess this is your type of unfinished business." That's from Tycho.
Oh, that's great. Unfinished.
Should actually keep a log of that and like a clip,
that's a good
note.
One.
Maybe every quarter, so
well,
do a another day.
You know, we can get some of this unfinished business or topics for another show done at some point on the Patreon side of things.
True.
If you guys want to subscribe to us on Patreon at patreon.com/rsbnb, that's one of the tiers that we can go towards with that. But we'll have more than that just a bit later. So how did it all begin? Well, back in 2005, before the update came out, or the farming update, rather, we decided, and it wasn't actually my idea to begin with. It was said by Pika, who was our first co-host for the podcast, that there should be a RuneScape radio show. And this is at the time, of course, when podcasts were first beginning. So that's how RSBNB Update first began. It was an idea to start as something like a RuneScape radio show, and we put it in podcast form, and there we go from there. The first episode of RSBNB Update, I think we did without talking to each other over voice first. It was our first time talking to each other. So there was that, and we used Skype, of course, for that. I don't even remember what we used for the recording side of it. So now, personal development-wise, I can say that doing a podcast like this is going to help you at public speaking, because as it is, you do this show, and for anyone who sees this, there is a list of show notes here, but there isn't a script. And that's what RSBNB Update goes off of.
Unscripted.
And, you know, Earth says here in the chat, he's dropping it on us because we do this in the RSBNB Discord. He says, "And now he's never quiet." So, You know, that is one thing that came with it. I have also learned a great deal about audio engineering and, you know, proper microphone technique and the proper way to effectively take that raw file you get that you record into your computer and bring it out into what you guys hear at the end of the day. And of course, we can also have Dave to help us with that in terms of the show music.
Yeah, I was going to say, in terms of my personal development, check last week's episode and check this week's episode, and you tell me how much I've developed in terms of audio engineering.
Exactly.
I'll let you be the judge of that, for sure.
So that's the answer to that one. You know, the direction on the show that we like to provide, it varies heavily based on, I think, what we're seeing in terms of RuneScape. I know last year, the tail half of last year, we were very much in a in reassurance mode after the cancellation of Menaphos and Unfinished Business, because we didn't know where that was going to lead. And this year's motto for us has effectively been to highlight all of the various positive things that come out of these updates while providing constructive criticism, because at the beginning of the year, we said that Jagex needs to learn how to win this year. They need to know how to quantify what they put out as victories. And this podcast this year has been explaining that. So it varies from year to year and what exactly is going on with that in that regard. And I think we've done a good job so far of that, Tanis.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Hopefully the listeners think so.
Because can you think of a bad update this year?
I really can't.
That was horribly bad that needed to be majorly fixed?
Objectively.
Yeah, not anywhere near some of the stuff that happened last year. So this year, there have been maybe one or two just kind of meh updates, but nothing that was done wrong.
Yeah.
Nothing was half done, which is a biggie that they're actually completing these updates, and we don't have to go back in 2 months and fix them. Achievement diaries, but it's stuff like that, and so
and in general we try to not be inflammatory.
Yeah, I think we try to be, give our honest opinion as people, because we're not just host and co-host and experts and this and that. We're players, you know. I wasn't here in the beginning, but I'm sure for you, Shane, it's like you're a player before anything.
Yep.
So it's like, you know, we see everything through that kind of a lens. Now, of course, we try to be a little more like I said, objective, constructive criticism, and positive when they've done a good job. You know, it's like, I don't like to be on that bandwagon, like,
right, hey, specifically about Jagex, the mining and smithing update this week.
Yeah, I'm legitimately surprised about that, because in February when we had the beta, I raved on the show about how wonderful it was and how good it was, and I don't know if they had those numbers at that time. I remember them saying it wouldn't be quite as good, but I know for a fact that if I had known it was 80 stats, I would have thrown a fit then. Like,
you know, and I honestly, I think it would even be a little bit more tolerable if it started at 85 and you could upgrade it to 90, then it would be a tier 90. Like, that's fine. I understand that.
Oh, we're going round again. Yeah. We're coming back to that.
Here we go. Anyway, moving on.
It hurts. It hurts, man. It's raw. It's raw right now.
And, you know, one of the other, I think, one of the darkest periods of the show was the bot epidemics in, 2008, 2009, and again in 2011, 2012. So, the bot epidemics. So, but yeah, and, you know, all those, that's a topic for another show. That is actually what we considered calling the Patreon segment. So that's what that's for. But more information on that later. So.
Yeah, the topic for another day is actually a topic for another day. So we're going to leave you with that one to cliffhang.
Alrighty. Well, thank you, Tycho, for that. And if you guys want to send in your own questions, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com. You can also call or text 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. Or you can leave us a DM on Twitter at rsbnb. Alrighty. So let us move on to tech news right now. So this week, I think, you know, two pieces of tech news is enough. We can talk about E3. So,
yeah, because that's a big one.
So there's a whole list here of games that I've been presented with by everyone that is involved in producing the show that they are interested in. Fallout 76, Elder Scrolls 6, Beyond Good and Evil 2, Forza Horizon 4, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Fortnite for the Switch, Jedi Fallen Order, and Rage 2.
We know what Shane's favorite is.
Which is...
The Force is strong with you, Shane.
Oh, gosh. Is that your favorite?
Oh, of course.
There is only one game on this entire list and on an entire E3 is the only game I care about. And I think Shane knows what it is.
Forza Horizon 4.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the only one on this list that I'm interested in as well.
Really?
I heard rumors it was going to be in Japan, but...
they chose the UK.
England is a lot better. Yeah. I can definitely dig that. There's got to be some sort of a Top Gear reference in there, I'm sure.
Oh, no. Are you going to drive on the wrong side of the road?
I know, right? I've been driving on the wrong side of the road for the past three games. Two games. Yeah. So
which of these do you guys think is going to be the biggest and most successful?
Oh, biggest and most successful. That's a whole different question.
Biggest and most successful, I'm going to go with Elder Scrolls 6, just because Skyrim has been milked every last drop.
And to be fair, Elder Scrolls 6 was teased with just a title card.
Oh my god. Yeah. Like I've got so much respect for the series, but like it's become worse than Guitar Hero. They haven't even made new games. They just keep re-releasing it for new consoles. It's like how much can one play Skyrim? And I'm going to get a lot of hate and a lot of backlash from that, but it's just like, oh my gosh.
I recently just picked up ESO this week, actually. So,
I'm
down with the Elder Scrolls sickness here, you know, but
sure.
I think you got to go with what is already proving to be just a juggernaut in Fortnite, man.
Oh, yeah.
Fortnite for the Switch.
It's already on mobiles and everything, but put that in the hands of you know, it fits. Like, if you look at Fortnite, does that not remind you of, like, a Nintendo game, right? Like,
it really does.
Yeah, it really does. So I just... as in for success, I think it's probably going to be that. But I, you know, I'm very partial to Rage 2 just because Bethesda and id working together make some of the best games. And they're with Avalanche this time too, I think. Or is id and Avalanche produced by Bethesda? Yeah. So, post-apocalyptic setting. I'm not so much on the open world, but these are the guys that made, you know, the new Wolfensteins and the new Doom, and I really think it's going to be in the same kind of vein where it'll be kind of underrated but really good.
There's also... Microsoft did tease that they are working on designing the next generation of Xbox consoles set to launch in 2022.
I thought Ubisoft said the next generation was over in like 2020.
Right.
That was it. We're done.
Right.
Yeah. Huh.
And I know some of the things that the people we hang around with in the RSBNB Discord have been interested in was seeing whether Fallout 76 will be successful or not, given the way they're changing the way that game works. And also there was zero mention of Halo 6 at this thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So.
Hmm.
But beyond that, I mean, I didn't follow E3 too much here, but I think everyone here has their, has their exact choices.
Yeah. I mean, obviously my favorite is going to be the Jedi Fallen Order because it's a very like, no, they've never really done anything with that time period between, the third movie and the fourth movie, where the Jedi are being hunted, and it's a really dark time. So there's not a lot, you know, out there on it. So I think it'd be pretty cool. Respawn is doing it, and Respawn has done some pretty good games. So I'm liking it's in their hands.
Oh, apparently they did mention the next Halo game, Halo Infinite, just not as Halo 6. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But also Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, that one's going to be interesting because you can play as any character that's been there in the past.
It's got every...
And like, you're going to be able to use GameCube controllers for it, too. Yeah.
Like, you name it, it's pretty much a character on there.
All right. Anything else on E3?
No.
All right.
Oh, well, maybe the one last thing.
Okay.
See, we're unscripted. See? This is proof right here. No Man's Sky is being released for Xbox in July, and it's actually going to be the game that they promised us.
Will it, though?
2 years ago. Yeah, it actually, it will. I mean, sure. I think it will. God, I hope it will.
It's got a lot to live up to, that's for sure.
It does, but, you know, at least they didn't give up. They came back, and it's coming out in July. So if you've picked it up, give it another look. It'll be good. I hope.
All right. Well, please. That was E3. I mean, we could talk about E3 forever, but I think that covers most of the headlines in terms of the games that everyone is interested in. But our next piece of tech news actually relates to Google and privacy. You know, we like talking about privacy here on the podcast. And this week, Google released a new control panel to control your Google ad experience. So they say back in 2009, we launched ad settings, providing you with a single place for ad controls. And in 2011 and 2012, we introduced Why This Ad and Mute This Ad, giving you more transparency over the ads that you see. And in 2015, these were all brought into the Google accounts. So today, they say they are launching the new ad settings interface, which makes it easier to find and under control and control how ads are tailored to you. They're also providing more transparency around why you see certain ads, and this will show up for all services, including search, YouTube, and almost all websites that partner to show Google ads. So with that being said, when you head on over to this page here, this new ad settings will show the different factors that determine how ads are tailored to you in one view. So an example here being given is that ad personalization is currently on, and you will be able to see everything that Google knows about you in terms of your interests and where you fit in into, I guess we could say, their model for this. And the best part about this is that you can just turn it off if you don't want any of it. So as you can see here in the example they give, it shows that the person in question is female between the age of 34 and 45, and they decide to remove the soccer option from their ad personalization. So you can effectively really drill down into this and remove any information that you don't want Google to have on you for their ads. And the best part about this is that if your ad settings option for tailoring ads based on interest is already off, there's going to be nothing there. And you can actually see that from the very beginning. And that's what I saw when I went into my ad settings, because I turned that off years ago. So there's nothing there for me to see. So you can actually just access this at adsettings.google.com. And if you're logged in, it will take you to the right page where you can enable that. So this is Google being transparent. I think they need to do that after everything that we've seen so far with Facebook and the like.
Mm-hmm.
These are not the ads you were looking for.
Yeah.
A little reference there for Shane.
Yeah. What's the reference?
It's a Star Wars. Lord.
Oh, okay.
These are not the droids you were looking for.
Okay.
We need to set him down and make him watch the movies someday.
No. No, thank you.
No. Join the pop culture, Shane. It's only been a part of it for the last 30 years.
So. Apparently that ad settings.google.com URL doesn't work if you directly punch it in. Apparently you need to go to adsettings.com and be authenticated to log in for it, I guess. I don't know. It appears to be working. All right. Anything else on this story, or shall we move on to our other things?
I believe that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad they're doing it.
Yep. So. And I mean, you can disable third-party cookies and you can make it a lot harder for them to do that. So, all right. So the May skill of the month update, or sorry, the June skill of the month update. We are in June now. It is the crafting skill of the month, and Sorensen 57 is far in the lead with 6.8 million experience gained. Parnassius is in second with 2.3, and Tanis, you're in third with just under 430.
I'm in third. Well, okay.
Now, if only divination was the skill of the month.
Oh, that would have been a good thing to have. This
might be in first.
No. Something
but,
like that.
I mean, it's crafting. It's slow, and it's expensive.
Yeah. I don't blame you guys
for doing that.
Well, I was trying to do it for free, and then I just couldn't make any more earns. I just couldn't do it. I tried.
Yeah. How much harmonic dust did you end up with?
Quite a bit, probably a couple K worth, but I had switched midstream, kind of like I switched into making farming urns, and then that just, I lost a little piece of me that I'll never get back, and so, like, can't do it anymore.
Yeah. All right. Well, commendable effort in that regards then.
Yeah, enjoy the fruits of my labor there, Shane, next time you're on a farming run.
I actually don't use those urns when I'm just herb farming, believe it or not.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow.
All right. So this is the point of the show where we say thank you to those of you guys who are supporting us and aiming us in the right direction of moving us forward to take us on to that next level of RSBNB update, where if we do reach our tiers on Patreon at $15, if we reach $15 a month in pledges, we will do that monthly. That's a topic for another show or monthly bit episode of RSBNB update. If we reach $30 per month, we will start doing a video show with our shining faces. And if we reach $45 a month, those video shows will be live streamed on the internet. So if this sounds interested to you, you can have a look and see what we're up to on Patreon at patreon.com/RSBNB. We offer three tiers of support, $1 a month, $3 a month, and $5 a month. For $1 a month, that's your complimentary support to RSBNB Update. You help fund the costs of hosting and production of the show. And if you choose to go up to $3 a month, you'll receive a special rank on Discord if you want, a mention on the podcast the week you subscribe, and early access to our show notes, and of course, all the previous bells and whistles that you get. And if you're truly generous and you want to go for that $5 a month tier, you receive a shout out every week on the podcast and exclusive access to the outtakes we use for the clip show, in addition to everything else. So you can find out more about that at patreon.com/RSBNB. And with that, I would like to give a special thanks out to our first pledger, and that is Adam T for pledging for $5 a month. So thank you very much, Adam, for pledging for RSBNB Update. We look forward to seeing what we can accomplish here in the future as a group. All right.
Thank you. You're the man.
Certainly,
ball rolling.
Certainly gets everything going, and we get to see where we go in the future. And I know there are a lot of people out there who want us to get to that $30 a tier range.
I'm excited. Like I'm really excited. I would to see a Patreon and everything. I was like, we need a sound effect or something, like a shofar, you know, a horn or some Star Trek-y thing for Shane or something. I don't know.
Well, if Dave wanted to, he could provide something for that, but I think he's already outdone himself for this.
Yeah, he's outdone himself already.
I need to hibernate for another. Oh my god!
I didn't call that up, but I don't think that's the sound effect. Thank you, Earth, for that. All right, and with
Thank
that big...
You.
Shane, stop interrupting yourself.
I'm good. That is the RSBNB soundbot, and I'm going to mute that while we do the achievements right now. So we're going to move on to achievements of the week, and we got a good selection of them. So starting off this week on June 13th, we had Mr. Nokia with 99 Magic, Seabreeze 24 with 99 Fletching. Now on the 12th, we had Robbie with 120 Thieving, Daydreamer with 99 Farming on the 11th, Wiley with 99 Divination also on the 11th, and Gunship with 99 Constitution filling out the 11th.
All right, nice, everybody. We also had Touchpad Pro with 200 mil Slayer. Very nice. That was on June 10th. And Tycho Elf with 120 Slayer on June 10th. Nice. And Halal Bacon with 99 Fire Making on June 10th. And Wiley with 99 Hunter on June 10th. And we also had Lin Su with 99 Runecrafting on June 9th.
Nicely done, everyone.
To wrap it up, we have Cyanpner with 99 Summoning on the 8th. Thieves with 120 Mining on June 8th. Mama Mystic, 99 Fire Making on the 7th. Duke Juker got 99 Slayer and 99 Runecrafting on the 7th. And Nordic Falcon got 99 Constitution on the 7th. Awesome job.
Nice achievements, everyone. That was a big week. We've had, you know, around five or six for the last couple of weeks, but this week there's a whole huge grouping of them.
Yes, I always like the 200 mil, regardless of skill. It's that is one heck of a grind, that's for sure. So
yeah, it is.
And especially for Slayer.
Oof. Oh yeah, yeah.
All right, well, time for a pick of the week. Unless you guys have decided that you guys want to throw a pick of the week in, I'll go with mine. Is that good?
Go for it.
Yeah.
All right, so a number of weeks ago, Google unveiled their new news application. And, you know, I have to follow the news for the other podcasts that I do because, you know, it's just part of the thing you do. And we're in an interesting time in the world here where so much of the news is moving towards a social media kind of standard where everyone is just jostling to get all their news out on social media. And there's so many different headlines and whatnot for the same story. So what this Google News app does is it utilizes your past reading activities and it tries to figure out what would be the best news stories for you based on your reading. And I can say so far that it's been pretty accurate. It knows that I like Canadian news, that I follow games and Star Trek in particular, and it surfaces all those news stories in the tab, in the For You tab in this news application. And what it also does that's a bit different than, say, a standard RSS reader is that you can tailor the sources. So if there's a source you don't want to show up, you can remove that source. But I don't do that because I like to see everything from all the sources that are available just so I'm not putting myself into a certain silo. And what's more, if there's a certain topic that you're interested in that might not appear as much in the news feeds as you would like, you can actually subscribe to that topic in kind of what you could call almost a dynamic RSS feed. So if you want to find all the news, for example, about astronomy, you can sort that into one of these sections as well, and you can have that be one of the sections that you'll go to. And if you start reading more of these stories, or if you put a star on some of these stories, they will start appearing in the For You section of the Google News app. This isn't going to be too much new for people who are Android users and for people who use Google Now, because Google Now on Android already accomplishes something that is somewhat similar to this. So this is more of a solution for people who don't want to go into the full Google Now experience or just want a separate place they can go to for news, or as in my case, someone who is on an iOS application. And what's more with this, if you choose to subscribe to various newspapers, you can also access all those subscriptions here in what they call the newsstand. So if your publication offers a subscription-based model, you can subscribe to it and read it directly from the app here. And, you know, they've also updated the Google News website, but I find that the app presents the information better than the website does. So it's just a good way of, you know, if you're thumbing through these things, you might want to bookmark it for later. It's just a good way to get all of the news sources without having to rely on, you know, those one or two news sources or open up a bunch of tabs in your browser window. So that's the Google News app that's available on iOS and Android for the pick of the week.
Cool. Now to check that out.
Yeah. And, you know, I would highly recommend it because I know way too many people in this day and age who get their news from only one source. And if you remove all the blocks on this, you get news from all the sources and you get a much more informed view of what's going on. And let's face it, in this modern era, you need to do that. You need to do your own due diligence when it comes to reading news. So.
Yeah,
that's definitely something. And, you know, to be fair, it's a bigger issue in the U.S. than it is in Canada, but still, it's good to do. So,
yeah, I absolutely will not get news from Twitter or Facebook. It's not how I do it.
All right. So what have we been up to this week? Let's start with you, Dave. What have you been up to on RS?
Well, I've been stuck in the stronghold of security for the past 4 days now. I was wondering if you would catch on. Going for my Goblin Champion Scroll. Mm-hmm. So on that last little grind, I say last little grind, but not really. I got 5 out of the 16, I believe it is. So I'm slowly chipping away at that. But other than that, just keeping up with what the merchant has at Deep Sea Fishing and going for merchants.
Deep Sea Fishing merchant.
Yeah.
All right. How about you, Tanis?
Well, wandering around, clicking on pillars, hoping for the best. And that been doing this week. So, yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much it, though.
Well, as for me this week, I sampled the divination update and tested its energy gathering capability, and I am very pleased with that. Divination is still one of the best ways of training, earning GP out there, so I can always recommend that to everyone. But beyond that, I did my first Slayer task of Adamant Dragons. And they weren't too bad, actually, believe it or not. And, you know, there are lots of Addy bars that you pick up, so much so that I actually used all my dragon trinkets that I had from those Treasure Hunter promotions all those years ago. So there's that. But beyond that, I'll probably get back to Slayer. And, you know, I have no shortage of clue scrolls now. I have a master and 2 elites and, you know, 20 odd hards sitting in my bank right now that just need to be done and finished at some point. And
I capped out at 25 hard clue scrolls when I was getting my Calgarian demon titles like halfway through. I had a heap of stuff to do with those.
You know, Parnassius a while back did a video, and it turns out that the hard clue scrolls are the best ones for money making GP wise because they're short enough and they still reward the good items.
I could see that, yeah. Interesting. I like that.
All right. Well, I believe that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. So thank you both for being here, Tanis, as per usual. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And, of course, Dave, good to have you back. And thank you once again from everyone here at RSBNB Update for the closeout and intro music tracks. They're truly amazing. Truly
absolutely
amazing.
No, I'm super glad that I've gotten – great reception bar, and also a little self plug here. The audio quality might be less than optimal, obviously, with the podcast due to how it works, but if you want the higher quality, the highest quality that YouTube will allow, we will put a link to my YouTube channel in the description, and those will be live on my YouTube channel, both of them, for you guys to listen to at the highest possible quality for your listening pleasure. So that would be awesome if you guys go check it out and drop a comment. Let me know what you think. So other than that, I just want to thank everybody at RSBNB for being so kind and receptive and friendly for the years I've been here. So it's honestly it's an honor to be able to be such a big part of this production and show and whatnot. So
and we're glad to have you. And quite honestly, we've morphed to a point where we have almost 15 people, maybe 12, 13, but almost 15 people who chime in and pipe in to produce the RSBNB update each week. A number of years ago, it was just me and the co-host were, mm-hmm. this is a much better production than we had before. So, everyone here makes this happen. Like, for example, we have Tycho submitting lore-based discussion talks. We have Parnassius with his investigative videos. We have the RR man with his great introductions in the past. And of course, we can't forget Colton in terms of lore, David in terms of PVM, Sirion in terms of mechanics, and for tech news as well, 100% helpful with that. And of course, you guys here on the podcast today, Tanis and Dave, really great. So. Thank you.
Indeed.
Thank you. And that's just a small number of the people who have been involved in the past here. There's many more than that, but those are the people who are involved regularly today. So thank you. Thank you, everyone, for that. And with that being said, I will say that if you want full show notes for this episode, you can find it at update.rsbnb.com. Full show notes and whatnot there. You can also join us in-game at Friends Chat Bits Bytes if you want to chat with us, hang out with us. And, of course, we're on Patreon at patreon.com/rsbnb. And with that being said, we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See you. Bye-bye.